When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's pretty good. That might be the first time I've ever used the good side of things to describe a loss. But when you are missing eight members of the team in totality, and you go toe-to-toe with the defending champs who play their big lineup at the end, who are healthy on the other side, and while it wasn't full bore the whole way for them, but you get 38 minutes out of Nikola Jokic. The Nuggets wanted this game, and the Raptors took it to him with a starting lineup of Ochai Agbaji, RJ Barrett, Kelly Olynyk, Grady Dick, and Bruce Brown. Javon Freeman Liberty, that's G League right there. 12 minutes. Jontay Porter, 22 minutes. That's G League. Jalen McDaniels, almost 20 minutes. He went 5-for-9. That's not G League, but that's biannual exception. Jordan Wara, 2-for-7. He's been in the G League very recently. Like, this Raptors team was really up against it as far as the talent deficit. And in this, like, in this starting lineup, the longest tenured Raptor was Grady Dick. In fact, of all the players who played tonight, the longest tenured Raptor was Grady Dick. That's crazy. And the Raptors went toe-to-toe with the Nuggets. It's insanity, really. We got some hallmark games, I think, that we get to celebrate to some degree. And when we're looking at a game where, to me, it matters a lot when Grady comes back with like 7 assists and sets career high, that's a huge deal. We see that awesome like wing to rim pass that he made, which was massive and huge, to Ochai. And he gets a fist pump and flexes after it goes in because he's like, man, this was great. I'm glad that one went in. The bounce pass to Ochai as he cut down right the middle. He made it from the corner. And Ochai finished with that dunk contested. We see him running a high pick and roll, which doesn't happen for Grady all that often. And then slinging that pocket pass. He also got steals early on Jokic. The very first play of the game. He blitzed Jokic, got the steal, pushed it up court. Didn't make the looping layup that he sometimes does make. But he did end up getting a steal later on, pushing and hitting a pull-up above the break triple. He finishes with 17 points, 7 rebounds, or 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, and goes 7 of 12 from the field for 58%. RJ gives you 26, 7, and it says 9. The Raptors PR tweeted out that he had 10 assists, and that was his career high. So I don't know if they took one away. I don't want to steal his luster, but RJ especially I thought was really impressive as an engine pushing the Raptors forward. It was surprising to see him able to get to spots and score late against the Nuggets. He wheeled them into a lot of baskets late. And just overall, like, the Raptors played with pace, they played with intensity, they played with speed, and that's what Jokic talked about post-game, was that, like, they played fast. They beat us to a lot of spots. And the system, which is meant, you know, as I was tweeting out and have written about, this system that Darko has put in has very, very clearly, it should be able to elevate more, let's say, less than elite talent. It should be able to get more out of the back end players because of what it indulges out of players, what it asks of them. And you see, like, Jontay Porter, 5-for-9. Jalen McDaniels, 5-for-9. Ochai Agbaji, 4-for-7. Bruce Brown still came in at under 40%. I don't know how he does it, man. But basically, everyone had an efficient night. And the Nuggets, they didn't have it all the way turned on. But who is all the way turned on? It's Fendi Arbarehaney here to talk about it with me.
Yo, hello.
How you doing, man?
How was that game? That game was awesome. I thought we were going to experience a pretty sad game just with Denver cooking and, like, you know, the amount of guys that were out. A bunch of people tweeted this beforehand, but Grady was, like, the longest tenured
Raptor. I talked about that.
It's just such a bizarre game. This is, if the Raptors had won that game, I think it would have probably been, like, the biggest upset of the season. Like, maybe, just because, like, the amount of people who were missing, players that were missing for the Raptors, I don't know. It just... it was insane. I heard you talking about a lot of the offensive stuff. I thought that looked incredible, just back cutting the Nuggets to death and whatnot. But yeah, that was a fun game, man. That was a really fun game, actually.
I have one question. Yeah. 26, 12, and 5 from Jamal, 58% shooting. Oh, he was so good. This validate the Raptors as a championship contender? You know, the Jamal Murray corollary.
Yeah, of course. I mean, hey, you know, for at least for like the first half, he was, it kind of made us seem like, oh, we're not worthy. But then he turned it up. I like that fourth quarter was just like, okay, let's win this game now. Can we just be for real for a second? The like little scoop shot he did, lefty, was ridiculous. The little dump off.
Yeah, no pickup scoop from the hip.
Ooh.
And then also gets middle on Kelly, the pump,
yeah,
pivot,
yeah. And then under, oh my god, just, yeah, he was just in his bag, man. And it's so weird to look at his career. Like, he's one of the strange, I mean, obviously you don't need all stars and whatnot to validate yourself. He's a championship player, you know.
He validated himself by going for like 26-6 in a finals,
in the finals, yeah, like one of the, what was it, one of the only players ever to do whatever his counting stats were in the finals. I can't remember what it was exactly, but yeah, he was incredible. And they just turned it up. Like, the Raptors, the Nuggets probably sleptwalk a little bit through this game, especially the first half.
Not probably.
Like,
that was happening. Yeah.
like they were like, oh, there's a basketball game to be played. I forgot about that.
When Jokic was saying, oh, they played fast, they got two lost spots on the floor, he could have just as easily said, we played quite slow. Yeah. It's Coco is asking, what is the Jamal Murray corollary? So basically, the saying goes that Jamal Murray is such a badass that he refuses to get up and compete at his highest level for any team that is not, you know, a contender. Yeah. And this correlates quite well with the fact that he is uber valuable and puts up better stats by some measure in the playoff context. And that is the Jamal Murray corollary. And the Raptors saw him go for 26, 12, and 5, which I'm sure is actually, maybe the rebounds are a little bit shy, but that's like probably closer to his final stats than his regular season stats are right now. John Hamilton says those Kentucky guards are always good. Jamal, Maxey, Quick, SGA.
They're
pretty
so good.
Safe to just grab a Kentucky guard and be like, good. I know Ty Ty isn't turning out the way people thought, but you're still batting a very high percentage. The Raptors probably have the least like insane of all the Kentucky guards, but I still like Quickly quite a bit.
You know what's funny? It feels like every school has their patent type of player that they develop and like build. Like Gonzaga is like these tall shooter types who can create a little bit, do a little bit of everything. It's like Kelly Olynyk.
I'm a Gonzaga product, and that's not really my game, as you
dude,
well
you
know.
Could have taken the tall compliment, bro. Come on.
Actually, redacted. Yes. Yeah, spitting S.
You should have took it and ran with it.
And the shooter compliment.
Yeah, and the shooter compliment. But I don't know. Yeah, Rob Dillingham, also Kentucky guy. A lot of people will be talking about him if the Raptors keep their pick. Yeah, Kentucky guards are just incredible. We had this conversation in the chat the other day where I was just like, I don't know what they do in Kentucky to get these guards to just be excellent, you know? And it's just a good batting rate. Like, I don't know. Josh obviously can probably answer this question much better than either of us can, but yeah.
I was going to say, somebody asked me the other day about Kansas and teaching cutting, because a lot of players who come out of Kansas seem to have a really great sense for cutting. And I don't have a good answer for that. Neither you or I claim to be like big college basketball watchers. Not at all. Quite frankly, like our coverage is always like, we have these friends, who do this and do it well, and we are clearly learning and then parroting, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to do that right now, because I think Raptors Twitter, if they've learned anything about Grady Dick from myself, and you know, pat myself on the back very early, you know, day of the draft, I said on Sportsnet Radio that Grady's the guy. But pushing forward, even as he was struggling, a lot of my knowledge about his game initially came from Josh Gondera. I want to know where your thoughts are on Grady. 17-7-4. He was a, like, he's not a star tonight, but I wanted to say it. I'm like, he's a star tonight, man. He was killing it.
No, he was a star in his role. Like, he, like,
hell
he
got, yeah.
You got to get, yeah, you got to take those moments when you can with Grady. And like, with the season that he's had, the start of the year, to have these type of games where he looks so incredibly comfortable throughout, just feels like he's taking every neck. Like, I tweeted this out, but it just feels like every game is just, he's taking a little notch more, you know, he's just learning a little bit more. There's a comfortability to everything that he does that just wasn't there at the start of the season. And it's cool to see him progress so quickly, because the conversation around Grady, especially at the draft, talking to Josh, talking to Hoop Goose, who, by the way, Hoop Goose, my guy, our guy Goose, was like so high on Grady very early on. And we're like, all right, I guess like he's actually,
well, he was second.
Yeah, yeah.
First was he T. Who will not be named.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
T.
Yeah.
He was first. And then, oh, wait, actually, no, sorry. I'm so sorry. No,
are you
that's
mixing
not correct it? At all. No, T was late. Sorry, T was late.
Because I remember T, I was like, I was having breakfast once, and T was just spamming with Grady Dick highlights and whatnot. Yeah.
So what happened, for anybody who cares, the lineage, I believe, is like Josh was first, Goose and Trey in a similar thing, and then T for months was like, don't show me white players. I don't care about white players. And then he became like the ultimate proselytizer of Grady Dick ethos. Like, this guy is the greatest we've ever seen. Maybe a bit too much inside baseball talk. But he playmaking. Like, you incredible. Clipped probably all of them.
Yeah.
What were your favorite assists? The wing to under the rim pass, of course.
But yeah, the zip pass to Ochai was obviously like just ridiculous. The angle, the pocket, the, like, you have to thread a needle. That's like a perfect definition for that type of pass, because how do you find that angle in the first place?
Knowledge of where the low man was, mm-hmm. because the low man was there when he caught it, and once the low man started moving away, the momentum shifted, and then the pass went, which is pretty good.
There was also another one where I don't think Ochai hit the layup, but Grady kind of came off of either a pick and roll or dribble handoff, and like immediately to, he stopped, picked up his dribble, and then like waited for a second, skip pass to Ochai in the corner, and then Ochai kind of took it, attack. I just thought he had a lot of great passes. And it was
he hung his pivot like crazy on that pass. It looked like it almost was a travel, but it was like that one leg goes up, hang, reset, and then zip it.
That's the type of stuff where it's like he feels so much more like comfortable with pick doing that, right, with assessing the floor. He's not feeling rushed in anything that he's doing. And you know, people talk about feel as this sort of like, it's, you can't really feel it, you know what I mean? It just, it's something that
it being like a direct substitute for anytime someone wants to say basketball IQ.
Right.
Just saying feel instead. When you have that urge, like, ooh, basketball IQ, feel is perfect there.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. People say the word processing speed for some of these players, which is a very popular word, right? And like, you know,
there's
whatever.
A lot of like, I'm guilty of using it, but I always say where it comes from. But there's like a lot of neurologist speech in drafting stuff. I don't know.
Whatever. But like, I mean, these guys have basketball computers in their head in a lot of ways. And then Grady's ability to process that so quickly.
They're basketball mentats. Shout out to the Dune fans.
Hell yeah.
If you get that, you're real. You're real.
Hey, you like the username right now? You know, hell yeah.
That's right. As was written.
Yes, as was written. But no, Grady was awesome throughout this game. I thought also just the ability to, he had that nice little scoop shot too at the rim where he caught it, pump, and then finish. I thought that was really, really nice. Just offensively coming off the curl too. Like, I think, man, his ability to put the ball on the floor plus make passes plus be able to read. And I thought there were moments tonight, especially at the start of the game, where he was really good defensively, like mucking it up in passing lanes. I think even at the halftime show, Jama was like, we love Grady's deflections and his energy. We need that more in the second half. And it's like, that's, if you can get that constantly from a player like that and also see him grow, I don't know, man. I'm just excited. I'm really excited to see what Grady looks like even a year from now, because it seems like he's picking things up so quickly.
Early on, like, and the coverage is there, obviously, from the early part of the season where the numbers weren't there, but I thought the, let's say the process was, the processing speed, the way he read the floor, the term is court mapping for those who care. And Grady being able to do all that kind of stuff as an off-ball player was immediately apparent. And he wasn't hitting shots, and you're like, damn. And then he started hitting shots, and now he's doing the court mapping and the cutting, and he's also hitting shots. And also you're like, ooh, there's some on-ball playmaking that's popping off. He's putting a guy in jail, doing a scoop layup to keep Jokic's timing off. Like, he's in the middle of the lane. We can even go back a couple weeks coming off a curl, looking back like Paul George, the rear view, okay, putting one dribble down, seeing the cut come from the corner, throwing the lob, catch, dunk. You're like, whoa, there's a lot going on. Yeah. And I understand Keontae George runs a lot of pick and roll, but maybe everyone freaked out a little too early. Grady looks good.
Yeah,
Joseph Cassidy says, hit the like, you filthy animals. That's right. This is how we spread the word of Moi Dick, as has so eloquently laid out.
No, people saw Jordan Hawkins come off of a couple pin downs and were like, he's the chosen one. But that is not true, man. He's whatever. I'm not going to get into a debate. But like, Grady is awesome and is showing why he's awesome to the people who, you know, like our buddy Josh, like Goose, who were really high on him very early into this process. This is validation for, you know, the way people expected him to potentially be in this league. I think, you know, the feel is a great aspect, but now that he's also tying in the shooting, coupling that with his special skill set, is just a huge part for what he's going to look like moving forward. And if, like, if you want to take anything from these games, which I think there was a lot to take away from in this game, it's the fact that a guy like Grady, who is a tent pole for this Raptors organization moving forward, is like doing what he needs to and progressing the way people expected him to progress.
Grady is pitching a tent. Yep. So what I wanted, but even more so than like validating, you know, process or like, ooh, I thought this guy was good. Grady is a player in the NBA now that a whole franchise, and quite frankly, the league gets to watch this guy do stuff. Yep. I'm sure you get people commenting, you know, how fun Grady's been lately, especially probably from analysts and stuff like that, right? So that stuff is great. Grady game in and game out is very fun, and I enjoy it a bunch. Kelly Olynyk kind of like absolutely mauled and destroyed Denver, which I know he comes away with just one assist in this game, but it's because they never sent any help and they freely switched on him. What did you make of the Kelly Olynyk 24 points bully ball masterclass
that
he was able to show?
It was, I mean, I don't really know, because we didn't really get a chance to see this. The last time I've seen a Kelly like this was he played the Pistons when he was on the Jazz. And this was right before the Raptors played the Pistons too. It was for the losing streak and whatnot. And Kelly just cooked the Pistons. I think it was like 28 points. He had four threes. I think he made a couple of his threes tonight too. But for the most part, he was just feasting on these up and unders, like in the post. I got a switch on me. He had it against Jamal, I think, in the third quarter too, where, hey, I got this smaller guy on me. He thinks he's going to be able to either muscle me or whatnot. No way. Pump, under. And like, he got to 24 that way. I thought he's just very crafty on the inside.
He also canned that triple early on where he was like, he just took the keeper on and walked into an above the break three. I was like, oh, damn, that's pretty good. Because he did shoot, what, 45% on above the break threes with the Jazz. It's like at 22 or 23% with the Raptors, unfortunately, but it's not, I don't know. We know what Kelly Olynyk is for the most part. You know, Canadian Roundup, who is Jonathan Chen, commented Houston Kelly tonight. If anybody does know, it's, you know, the world's best Canada basketball writer, Jonathan Chen. On top of that, too,
Jonathan was cooking tonight. I mean, Jamal, RJ, Kelly, he was having a good
the
time.
The intersection of a lot of interests, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
We have a couple questions. So from Ed A says, why did Darko pull Grady out for 1 minute in the fourth? This has happened a few times, for what it's worth. And Matt Stevens says, do you think Darko pulled Grady to give him a quick breather because of his conditioning issues of the past? So I think that could be a possibility. We've also seen, like, Grady, we're very excited about him right now. He's not nearly the player that Scotty Barnes is. We saw even, like, in the play-in game against Boston, Scotty got pulled for a breather, and Darko had trouble getting him back in. And, like, he stayed out too long. We talked about that. But this is obviously part of Darko's process.
Yeah.
Is, like, getting a guy a breather. He might even take that as an opportunity to talk to that guy, tell him what they're looking to identify, like, down
which
the stretch
happened,
or whatever.
By the way, I mean, I saw it on the broadcast, but, like, they kind of cut away from it quickly. Darko was doing a little bit of a teaching lesson with Grady,
yes.
Subbed him out. I thought it was, like, a bad thing. I thought he was, like, done for the night because they seemed pretty animated talking to one another. But then a minute in, he kind of did an offense-defense switch with J-Mac, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah. And we'll also say, too, like, I understand everybody wants lineups maximized, all that kind of thing. But Grady Dick is not a 6-point swing per minute clutch player. Like, this isn't something that costs the Raptors the game.
No.
Darko, in a season where Grady Dick is the longest tenured Raptor on the floor. Grady Dick is the longest tenured Raptor on the floor. We, like, the Raptors played a great game against the Nuggets, winning. And I'm sorry, it cannot be the expectation for this team on these types of nights.
There should be no conversation about Darko and rotations tonight.
I had a tweet that was, you know, Bruce Brown got caught cheating up the court and got burned on a skip pass in the corner.
Oh, right.
And then he didn't close out. You probably remember the play.
Yeah.
And somebody tweeted at me blaming Darko, like, oh, are these the lessons he's trying to teach? It's like, the coach is the coach. I get it. But they aren't fascists. The players play the game.
Yeah.
I get it. Coaching is like this place where everyone can focus their frustrations. I understand. But like the players play. Mostly be talking about the players. The players win and lose games for the most part.
I'll say this really quickly. The reason people gravitate towards officiating and coaching is because those are, I feel like, are probably two of the more subjective. I don't know. You can call officiating not subjective, but some of the calls in basketball become subjective in terms of offensive foul, blocking foul. Was it out of bounds? Was not, you know, these type of things like end up being these type of conversations. So that's what people gravitate towards most often. This does not apply just to Raptors fans. You look at NBA fans around, when a team gets robbed of a game, they will immediately blame the coach or they will immediately blame the officiating. It's just the two things that people tend to go after because they're the two most ambiguous things, I feel. Or maybe even like tangible, to the point where you're like, this call directly resulted in this team losing that way, or this substitution directly, you know, and that's just not the way it works in the NBA. So
I think coaching is extremely important in the NBA.
Of big course. Time. Yeah. Yeah.
Coaches make mistakes. Yes. There is a focus on Darko Rajkovic that I am, I guess, kind of confused by. And I know you and I got hammered a little bit. Going back to inside baseball talk, because I randomly tweeted out that I thought Darko had done, you know, a pretty good job this season implementing an offensive play
caused
style.
Quite the storm. Yes.
Yeah. Implementing an offensive play style, doing that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, saying like, you know, coaches in the past have been identified as like bad when their rosters weren't that talented. And then once they start winning, can be identified as quite good. That's the message I'm trying to make, right? And then it eventually gets to the point where it's like, these guys are on the take. And I'm like, I can't even get the on the take money. I'm the independent media guy. And then when it's like convenient, people just can say like, oh, he's paid by the Raptors. What? Yeah. I can't even get the Sportsnet like bag first.
I was about to say, it would be nice. It would be nice.
The crazy thing is, too, is like everyone, like I write a big piece on Quickly or RJ or God forbid these massive pieces on Scotty Barnes. And they say, this guy's analysis is second to none. This guy is spitting. But I analyze Darko as a coach and everyone says like, oh, well, who's giving you the money? Nobody. Yeah. I think Darko's good.
No,
I
it's
the projection to me is nuts. Why? We get to pick and choose when I'm like a mouthpiece versus when what I'm an earnest analyst.
It's same thing coaching, for you. It's because coaching is a black box, dude. Nobody really knows. Nobody's there at practice every day. Neither are we, by the way. And like nobody is like
you go after the practice. Yeah. You see like one-on-one workouts for the most part.
Yeah. And nobody is, I mean, yeah, I guess nobody is privy to all those conversations. You can't, nobody knows. And so everybody so quickly is just like that thing that I do not know is the reason everything is going wrong. And so, yeah, we're both on the same page about all of this completely. It's just a very ridiculous thing. Yeah, big money Samson. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm paid. I'll tell you what. If I ever do get paid, everybody will know about it. Okay? Cuz I'll be bragging about it. I'll be like, they paid me to talk about basketball on top of me getting paid to talk about basketball. I kind of want to talk about how they guarded Jokic. Any thoughts there?
I would be lying to you if that was like a focus for me.
Not front of mind.
Not front of mind, to be honest with you. I would have to go back and look because I'm curious to see what you really thought. Because for me, it was just the way the Nuggets fell asleep in that first half was just like, these dudes are not even remotely going to go for it. And so I would probably be bad to look at the Jokic side because honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure. Let me know.
So obviously it's not, nobody's changing. Jokic has seen more aggressive schemes. He's seen more radical ones, but I do think that the Raptors' timing on doubles and on sending extra help was pretty good because that is a lot of what getting the ball out of a guy's hands is about, really, is because you want to get them when they think they're ready to engage their defender. Like, you know, if you attack on the catch and then they know that's coming, attack on the catch, immediately assessing or assessing before the catch. Make the read, make the pass, all that kind of stuff. I get it. Great. But if you mix it up and mix timing up, they don't really know when the help is coming. You can throw it at different places. You can do it after they've like two dribbles, then you hit them. Like when Grady got the steal on the first play of the game, it's like the ball went down. That's when he triggered the attack. But that wasn't the consistent look that the Raptors gave him all game. They switched it up and gave him a lot of different timing. And while Jokic is like the best of the best and incredible, I thought that the Raptors did a fairly decent job, given the personnel, of hanging with them all night. And especially to the point that they made Jamal Murray into the big winner at the end of the game, which is a really good, in my mind, identifier of how you've guarded Jokic, because Jokic's release valve for when he's not completely able to like undo your whole defense is to get the ball to Murray. And Murray was the one, the Raptors did have trouble with him, admittedly, down the stretch. Yep. But I was pretty impressed with what they were able to throw at Jokic. With all that being said.
Also,
35 points, 17 rebounds, 12 assists, 6 steals.
Yeah, he cooked. Blocks. Yeah, I think, by the way, most of that was by the end of the third quarter. Because, like you said, Murray took over in the fourth, and it wasn't much of Jokic. The other thing, like, and shout out to Eddie Ace, who says it, like, Jontay Porter did a pretty good job. I thought one-on-one, in the possessions where Jokic did take it in the post, there were a couple possessions where RJ did a good job on him to kind of like just be a big body that, you know, kind of can be a contest there. Porter, same thing. And so, yeah, Raptors did a good job on Jokic, man.
Jonte had himself a game.
Yeah.
4 of 7 from downtown, 14 points, 5 assists, you know, 2 rebounds. You're not going to talk about that as a big man, but like 14 of 5. I'm pretty happy about that.
Stroking it. He was hitting his shots, which is, I mean, I think part of the appeal with Jonte always was his ability to stretch the floor. And so, like, the fact that he can have a game like this where he's hitting 4 of 6, and also, like, yo, doing it, he kind of fell out of the rotation and now has been forced back into the rotation. He played a little bit last night, but didn't play a whole ton, and or not last night, but against Portland. And now he kind of just gets thrusted into playing. How many minutes did Jontay Porter end up playing tonight? He ended 22. Up playing 22 minutes. Like, that's...
This was like draft evaluation, Jontay. Like, this is what... Like, he had a lot of, like, fans coming out of the draft. There's, like, you want to take a second round flyer on that guy. He's got a lot of talent, and you just hope the medicals come back clear.
Right.
And that's, like... him hitting threes and like being kind of like a slick little assist man. That was kind of his whole, that was the whole bag coming out of it.
And like
Jacob Tarasov quickly, who says best Porter in the NBA. And then we have Vilifying Force, who says Jontay isn't even the best Porter in his family.
Oh,
competing conceptions of the Porters.
Man. I like the fact that the Raptors young guys, I even thought McDaniels had a pretty decent game, to be honest with you. Had some.
He had that first one that he threw off the shot clock, which admittedly is a tough look. A breakaway that ends up going off the shot clock. It could be Shaq and a fool adjacent.
Yes.
But he ended up playing pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really look at anybody on the roster tonight that played and be like, he could. I mean, Bruce Brown for sure.
Bruce.
Yeah. It's just tough. Very, very tough.
The last good game he played was when I also wore a cowboy hat.
Oh, did you? Very nice. Just saying. There was that one night where the Raptors locker room was playing country music, right? Was that the same night?
What?
Yeah. Who
were they playing?
I don't remember. Come on. Am I really going to be the one?
You want me to tell everybody how big a country music fan you are?
You go to the
Morgan Wallen concert?
Oh, get out of here. I'm like, what? I have War Deer by Earl Sweatshirt in the back here. I'm not a country man. I'm sorry. I do like the country Beyonce song, though. That's a pretty tough song. They were playing country music. So I guess maybe that helped Bruce in some way, shape, or form. I don't know.
Possibility. Jewel says, I do not enjoy watching Two play. I don't understand his game. I have felt a similar feeling, not just recently, but over the course of the season, that Jalen McDaniels, what kind of would validate his presence on the team when they were trying to be competitive was hitting corner threes and being, you know, kind of sticky at the point of attack and being really strong in rotation. Mm-hmm. And none of that has happened.
Yeah.
Which puts him in a tough position. And now recently we see when he plays, you know, a lot of it's been garbage time, but then you're seeing him like come out of Chicago actions in the corner, curling into the paint. You have to like drive or make a decision. And that's not necessarily his strength.
Nope.
There's a couple players on this team who very clearly would benefit from playing around an immense amount of talent. Maybe that's stupid to say because I think most people do, but go ahead.
You know what, for what it's worth, I think the way this team is sort of constructed on the, when I jumped in here initially, you were talking about it, but just the cutting aspect, I think that's why they're leaning into this so much, is because cutting is something that it's a skill, but it's also a very teachable skill. So if you hammer it home on some of these younger guys, it's something that they can pick up rather quickly. It's about timing. It's about pace. And for the most part, most of these guys have a bit of a feel to do that. Like Ochai and Kelly and RJ and Grady, even Bruce before, have a decent feel for doing this. Bruce does not anymore. I don't know why, but I think the conceptually, guys like J-Mac, guys like Bruce, they make sense towards, even Jordan Wara, who had a couple of nice cuts tonight. Like, they make sense conceptually towards how this team wants to play.
Bruce confuses me so much because the first however many years of his career are comprised by being this incredibly effective, despite his size, guy who catches below the break and makes things happen. And with the Raptors, he's just always catching above the break.
Settling into these, like, my type of floaters, you know, the little 12-foot push.
That's right. Well, hopefully at the media game, you're like a facsimile of elite Bruce Brown like Raptors Bruce Brown, I suppose. We could talk about a guy who has not relied on the system that much, and sometimes it's just, like, driving, creating his own shots. RJ.
Hell yeah.
He was awesome tonight. 26 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds, and drove so much of the Raptors' late game offense. And I know a couple of people talked about it earlier in chat that they thought it was an and one on Jokic. I'll come out on the other side and say that, like, the bump and the shot were pretty far apart. And I probably was like, oh, yeah, he probably goes to the line instead of it being an end one. I thought play had kind of stopped and the ball went up. Now, if I'm public enemy number one for this stance, my apologies. Also saw Nesta ask earlier, just to address this, when Chris Boucher got injured. He got injured on the play where he, on the game time basket.
Yeah.
Who fell on his leg?
Kamara? I want to say Kamara.
Yes, yeah. Kamara fell on his leg. It's very similar to not the play, but yes, Embiid and Kuminga.
Yeah,
guy falls on the leg, a partial tear of his MCL, and they don't expect him to have surgery. But that kind of stuff is all up in the air. Yeah. I just hope they do whatever.
Pretty sure that's Boucher's also the best. I mean, I don't know about college. Maybe college is different, but I'm pretty sure that's like his biggest injury of his career. Also, right?
In Oregon?
Yeah, I think so. Did Boucher get injured 1 year in Oregon? I feel like he did.
I don't actually know.
Either way,
Or Oregon?
I don't. It's Oregon. Yeah. Wait, have you been saying Oregon?
I don't think so. I did. Here we go.
Yeah, he tore his
the
ACL.
The king of Canadian hoops coverage, Jonathan Chen, tells us he tore his ACL senior season. There we go. And Nesta at the same time, ACL before the tourney. Look at this. Chat is like a flowing brain with information for us.
Hell yeah.
It's almost, I could use this thing. I feel like I could use this thing as a Google search. You know? Just like, hey guys, I'm not going to type it up right now. Do you have it? That's kind of what like big Twitch streamers
they
do.
They do. Like, they're like, let me know.
What is going on with the, okay.
Yeah, my apparent doppelganger does that a lot from what I've seen. Yeah.
You have a doppelganger?
You
have many, actually. A lot of people think you look like people.
Yeah, I guess I have one of those faces, the you look like this guy type of face, the schmuck face.
People don't say I look like people, but they say I look like bald people to make fun of me.
Get called Joe Ingles one day. You did get called Joe Ingles.
That one upset me.
Yes, it should. It should.
That one I felt, because he's not bald. He's still trying to make it happen. A.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. B, I play nothing like that man. I couldn't believe it. You, Aiden Ross is your comp?
You know the guy?
That's
bad.
It sucks,
man. It sucks.
Whoa, we're Andrew Tate and Aiden Ross right now, dog. Whoa. That's terrible.
Oh, it's so bad, man. You know who called me Aiden Ross in Indiana? Yeah, he's this like funny dude who makes interviews with, he did one with Anthony Edwards. They were eating chicken wings. I forgot his name, but he's a comedian and he does interviews with people. I guess maybe chat can help me out with the Google search here.
Well, actually, let me say quickly.
Yeah.
I personally denounce both Andrew Tate and Aiden Ross. Do not share any beliefs.
Me too, man.
When I said we're Andrew Tate and Aiden Ross, it's purely for comedy.
Yeah, no, thank you for clarifying that. Thank you for clarifying. I don't know that was even needing to be clarified.
But you know, people might might clip it
right,
and put it out. Yeah, I recently clipped, you know, I was watching one of my favorite basketball analysts, and I just was like, they were breaking down game tape, and they randomly spent like 10 seconds saying how bald I was. You know, people do. Okay, basketball.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts before we get out of here on this?
RJ is the one thing I wanted to talk about. The dude is a walking 20 points per game. And I think that is, I remember people in New York a while ago when I would talk to Knicks fans, that was like the one thing they would hold on to. He's like, yeah, there's all these deficiencies in his game. And like, he could be better at this. He could be better at that. But he's also a walking 20 every night. And it's like, the value of that, but now he's also showing those efficiencies in his game, becoming more of a playmaker. He had a career high, I believe, in assists tonight. I just love that aspect hasn't gone away as he's tried to explore areas of his game that maybe weren't there. And it's like, he can do that every single time. He can get you 20, and now he's doing so efficiently, and he's trying to, you know, use that scoring gravity to create plays and make plays for others. And I just, I'm like, I'm bullish on RJ, but I'm also hesitant to be as bullish as I currently am on RJ. You know the feeling? Like, I'm like, ah, my guy, I have 4 years of information that I don't know how to filter through, you know, whatever. I don't know.
My RJ stance is that, and people should know by now, you know, there's a big RJ piece I just wrote the past couple weeks on RaptorsPub.com where I'm lauding his decision-making as a driver and the steps he's taken as a passer because he's been phenomenal. It's called RJ Barrett is Passing All Expectations. Basically, it's a more holistic and deep dive.
That's what you did there.
Yes. Breakdown than you could expect to get anywhere else if anybody likes RJ and is a fan of his game. I do not still think like RJ is like an up-and-coming star necessarily. And I also don't think that IQ is an up-and-coming star. That doesn't mean I don't appreciate their games or think they're good. It's like the bar to be a star in the NBA is impossibly high. I just wrote that big piece on Manuel Quickly wherein I talked about like Darius Garland does a million things incredibly well. He's on a good team and he's not an all-star.
Yeah.
To make an all-star game in a backcourt is unbelievably difficult.
Yeah.
Trae Young was, you know, an injury selection when he's putting up what, like 27 and 12.
It was 30 and 12. Yeah.
30 and 12. There you go. So I don't like the conversations around RJ being like people saying he's a star or he's not a star. What a binary, like boring conversation.
No. Yeah.
Why
does he
have to be a star? He gets paid $30 million a year. Okay. Fine. Or it's ascending to that or whatever, right? Right. Who cares? That's what he gets paid. A lot of guys are going to get the same contract as him that will not be stars.
Yeah.
He's not paid like a star. The expectation shouldn't be a star. If he gets there, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'll love to cover that progression. He's not a star now. He has to add things to become a star. He's 23. You don't say no to that. But it's okay to be like, we're waiting. He's young. And he does a lot of really great things now. He's the best driver on the team. Even was when Scotty was here. He shot the three ball better. He's improved immensely as a playmaker. He does it on less touches and he hardly takes up any of the ball. He's been sublime. There are questions on defense. That's been the case with everybody on this team for like 2 months.
Yeah.
The RJ stuff, conversations about it, it doesn't have to be binary. There's so much nuance to his game and he's such a unique player that's just like, dive in. Amit Kumar says, wasn't Garland an all-star last year? He wasn't.
Yes. Actually, he wasn't 2 years ago, right?
He was two years ago.
Yeah.
Because other guards elevated their games, and a guy who is all-star level is, if you stay the same, you got to keep going. You got to keep going.
Yeah, so, Brunson should have been an all-star last year, finally got his all-star nod this year. Like, it's really hard to become an all-star as a guard. It's just,
like, good luck, man.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys get paid.
De'Aaron Fox was like, there's so many examples. In the West, it's like mayhem. Like you can't, you know, there's no way to even disseminate who's supposed to be an all-star. Okay, question for you on the RJ front. And by the way, I agree. Yeah. Like the star, I'm not saying it's either star J.
No. Here. I'm arguing with a fictitious person.
Yeah.
So I don't upset anybody, but people will find themselves in that camp think, maybe it is a little binary.
Right.
That's what I'm doing.
He had, in New York, he had moments, what dare I say, pretty long stretches actually of being a good starter for the Knicks.
Yeah,
and the Knicks were like, he was, even Knicks fans will credit him on this. Like he was part of rejuvenating that franchise and getting them back to their winning ways. Yeah. Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson for sure. But like RJ being a solid starter on a team that went from terrible in his time there to a playoff team, I think is valuable experience for a team that is probably going through the similar arc here with Scotty, with IQ, et cetera, et cetera. It's like he knows what, even when the going gets tough, like, dude, you're winning 15 games or whatever in a season. It's like you can battle through that with a guy like that, you know?
Well, let's credit him for what he is, maybe like more than anything else, resilient.
Yeah.
You watch him play. He is guided by that ethic. He's a resilient player. And from talking to him, seems like a resilient personality.
Yeah.
And when you're going through the doldrums of a season, having a guy who's like puts on the hard hat and is like, I'm driving 12 times a game. an offense needs somebody to do that. Who cares what happens? I might be over, like, I might be asked to do a little bit much, but I will provide that. He did that for the Knicks as they figured out everything. And the Knicks made a trade that I think for them was a win in rejuggling some of the skill sets. Obviously, OG is a huge deal. I'm really excited for him to come back for the playoff run. But, like, that's awesome for RJ. And then on top of that, too, like, I know, and I see this all the time, you say good things about RJ, and then people are really quick to say, like, what he's not good at. I get it. But this Raptors team and, like, building next to Scottie and all that kind of stuff, they have to make decisions, yes. RJ plus Scottie fitting together, whatever it ends up being. I think you can talk about things like from a more appreciative stance than like being, well, RJ isn't a star. It's because of these things.
Yeah.
You can be right about a million things in basketball. It's like the stance everyone always takes when somebody's ascending and they make star status or all-star. Everyone just says, well, they're not a finals MVP level player. They're not a number one option.
Right.
Because there's only like four of those in the NBA and over like a 3-year span and a couple win finals MVP. It's just like the goalposts shift. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was RJ got traded to the Raptors. And then there were very public reports saying, like, this guy's a toxic asset. This guy is like, the Raptors had to eat that salary. Yeah. And now I think he's giving you a really, like, a healthy level of impact. He's improved immensely, immeasurably almost, in so many ways. And now it's like, well, he's not a star. It's like, who said he was a star?
Yeah.
Somebody he's said, just he's somebody just gotten better this contract. So this guy just comes over here and is like way better. Everything correlates and just says like this guy's better. Even the film has differences that are better. Yep. And suddenly it's like, well, he's not this. Not every player is going to be X or Y. Sometimes like there's a whole other alphabet, dog.
Yeah.
You can be a million different things. The RJ stuff is reductive. Nesta says, has RJ's output been more of an impact than OG had? Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm a huge OG guy for sure.
Yeah.
But not being OG Anunoby is not.
Is not like, the measuring
stick.
It's not a slight. Yeah. It's not a slight. It's not the measure. Like you're not trying to gauge it based off that. I know people will because of the trade, but that's not the way to approach it. With RJ, I think maybe something that's people talk about often with RJ is just like, and this whole core is how it's all going to fit together. And people forget how fluid these type of like rebuild things are. What is today does not apply tomorrow or next year. And so who knows what this team looks like 2 years from now, 3 years from now, whatever, because that's likely how long RJ is going to be on this team given his contract. So we don't know. And also, you know, for a long time, Raptors fans will know this. People thought the Raptors would be either led to the promised land or fail in the promised land by Kyle and DeMar, right? It was Kyle and DeMar forever. And then all of a sudden it wasn't.
Kyle played like 10 seasons with a team. And even the front office didn't seem to understand his game.
Yeah.
Like large parts
like
of it.
Five times they tried moving him or trading him or undervaluing him.
What you can do is you can always look at what people think about a player in like the early part of their career. And you can be right or close to right about what the end impact looks like, maybe. But people are really bad in general of just like pointing at a player and saying, this is what they will and won't develop.
Right.
Yeah. You just, good luck. If you're right, I'm very impressed. But
yeah. And you don't know, man. It just doesn't shake out this way. Coco says, will people here ease up on RJ if he plays well this summer? Inshallah. Inshallah. Yes, I agree. Inshallah.
Yeah. We'll see. Happy Ramadan to those who.
Absolutely. Take. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I feel. You want to feel like we complained about the RJ stuff and then we get out of here? Does that feel like a podcast?
I don't know, man. You tell me, man. You
are you? Like, well, you still got to do. This is why I always feel guilty because I love talking to you so much. But then I remember that you got to log off and you got to.
Listen, you know what? I have gotten pretty effective with the quickness of the. I've got a little work process, you know. So
I'm
when
impressed.
I can finish them relatively quickly.
They're good for the audio listener or the video watcher who hasn't tuned into the recap. It's incredibly good stuff. It's like when you were a kid and you were watching TSN, like SportsCenter, and they gave you like the 4-minute clip and it had all the stats and it had some like fun commentary while it was happening and they give you a quote. It's like that, but then S also is like a great personality whose analysis is like miles above what that was on TV. I've just always thought of your work as like you provide the like great stuff that TV did and you mix it with what like the internet has evolved as like Hell a yeah. vector for analysis.
You know what's crazy? That is exactly like to a T the goal of the recap. It was like, how can I do the TV yes. thing that people love and do? And like earlier in the year, if people were watching them, like before, it was me doing them outside of the arena. Like I really wanted to give that reporter style. Hopefully next year we'll be back and doing that because I've given up on that adventure, especially with the way this Raptors season is shaken out. But yeah, I love it. And I appreciate the fact that you like recognize that that is what I'm trying to do, because that is exactly what I'm trying to do. So yes, tap in.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate you.
Vilifying Force says, thanks for the recap and stream, Samson. And as Fandiar, get that bus riding money. Spelt our names with money signs. I promise everybody, you will know I'm too big time or I've moved from Rexdale when you stop getting the guardrail fit picks. That's how you know I'm not taking the bus anymore.
What's the next evolution? Like what would be your next evolution? What would be the Pokemon Samson 2.0? Like,
well, people ask me when I go to the arena sometimes that they think that I'm like I have a photographer or someone who takes those for me. So that's obviously, that's a big deal. Yeah. You know what? And like Raptors social media guy, the camera for the tunnel fits.
Walking in the elevator.
One time I'm walking in there, and you didn't flash the pic, you didn't snap it. And I said, hey, next time, you know, maybe I'm the guy, you take that picture.
Oh my God.
So, yeah.
Dude, you are the opposite of me, because every time I'm hesitant to come out of the elevator, because one time I walked out and Gary Trent Jr. or Scotty or Gary, I can't remember who it was, they walked out too, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be in this dude's picture. And then 20 minutes later, I see people being like, hey, is that you behind whoever it was? I don't want to ruin these people's pictures, dude.
I've already experienced something like this. In something that, you know, I wouldn't say viral, but people really enjoyed and latched onto, was a guy named S took a picture of Ochai Agbaji, and in the background I was going, it's just in my mouth, you know, total beta, was not mewing or looks maxing. I was caught in the background, and obviously it's a bit of a meme now. But yeah, it's like two buses and a train to get to the arena. The moment I lose that grind, that's when I took the bag.
That's when the dollar signs come up.
Or maybe I won one of those like rent controlled lotteries, like downtown or something like that, which doesn't seem particularly possible, to be quite honest. S, that feel like a podcast?
It does, man. It does. Yeah. Appreciate. Elevator stalker, Yosef. Yes, absolutely. I am. That's true. Thank you.
Before we get out of here, make sure to like the video, of course. Make sure tomorrow morning, tune in to S's recap, please and thank you. And if you feel so obliged, subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can stay up to date with everything. And if you have the means and the want, subscribe over at RaptorsRepublic.com. It's how we keep the website alive in its form and fashion and survive as media titans around us fall to the wayside. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
From myself and S, thank you so much for tuning in. And whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.